The jury is out.
The jury has spoken, and they have sent an unmistakable message.
We, the jury.
Jury will reach a verdict.
It's not my problem. It's up to a jury to decide.
Now, you as jurors sit as judges of the evidence. You're called the trier of fact.
It's the process.
You're stuck in that motel for weeks.
If you're worried about how this country is going, jury duty is how you fix it.
No jury can declare a man guilty unless it's sure.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Sarah Gonzalez in with Todd Zwillick. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court addressed racial discrimination in the courtroom by peeking into the jury deliberation room. The court ruled that if there's evidence of racial bias tainting jury deliberations, the secrecy of those deliberations can be thrown out, as can the verdict. It's a step forward, many say, in improving the way our system serves justice.
Like a lot of African Americans, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. I encourage any juror who thinks the police or prosecutors have crossed the line in a particular case to refuse to convict.
That's Georgetown law professor and a former federal prosecutor, Paul Butler, reading from a piece he wrote last year in the Washington Post in the context of what he and so many others call the two justice systems of America, the one for white people and the one for black people. And when black jurors suspect bias or injustice, Butler says they have the power to send a message that the system needs to change. It's a practice known as jury nullification. That's when jurors refuse to convict. And he witnessed it firsthand when he was a federal prosecutor. As part of our series of Our Peers, looking at the jury system in America, we spoke with Paul Butler and got his take on why refusing to convict, while maybe underused, still has a place in our justice system.
If you go to criminal court in D.C., Sarah, you would think that white people don't commit crimes. White people don't use drugs. They don't get into fights. They don't steal, because all you see is African-American people. There are a number of jurors in D.C. who at that time were mainly African-American who thought that there was something that was fundamentally unfair. And so if it was a nonviolent drug case with an African-American defendant, often they would refuse to convict. We didn't see this a lot in violent crimes or property crimes, but in drug possession cases, you saw it all the time. When I left the prosecutor office and became a professor, it was the first thing I wanted to study. And I found out that this practice of jury nullification is not only perfectly legal, it's actually a proud part of our constitutional tradition. It's one of the many things that led to the end of slavery, because it was a crime for a slave to run away. It was a crime to help a slave run away. Northern jurors would refuse to convict in those cases. You know, when I was a prosecutor, it was a crime in D.C., if you can believe this, for people of the same gender to have consensual sex. D.C. jurors had the good sense to refuse to convict in those cases. Of course, there's famous examples of when jury nullification has been used the wrong way, like when people were violent against civil rights workers in the South. So at the end of the day, jury nullification is like any other power. It can be used for good or it can be used for evil.
And what kind of cases do you think this should apply to, refusing to convict, jury nullification? Where do you draw the line?
I draw the line in a case with a violent crime when the jurors are persuaded beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant has intentionally hurt someone, then I think they should convict. And I'm really thinking of drug crimes where there's so much evidence of discrimination against African Americans. Sarah, you know, I work at a college campus, so everybody there knows that black people don't use drugs more than anybody else. According to the National Institute of Health, we're about 13% of people who use or sell drugs. But if you go here in D.C. to the Justice Department and ask who's locked up for that crime, 60% black, 13% of people who do the crime, 60% of people who do the time. Again, that's just straight out discrimination. And so I think that's a prime case where jurors should use their power to send a message that that's just unacceptable.
How would you make our jury system more fair today? How would you make it take better care of all of the people involved in the process?
So the first thing is that jurors need to be more diverse. Juries need to be more diverse. It's not good enough to just draw jurors from, say, driver's licenses or property roles, because a lot of people in the community don't have a car or a license. People of color might not own their own home, so they might not be on their tax rolls. So we have to look at a large number of indexes of people in the community, people who receive public assistance, people who are in homeless shelters. The more diverse a jury is, the more likely it is to consider everybody's point of view and to render a just verdict. You know, another thing, Sarah, is we can't allow prosecutors to get away with excluding jurors of color the way they do now. The Supreme Court said in a case called Batson that that's unconstitutional, but that's like the most unfollowed constitutional rule of all time, in part because the standard is so low. There was one case in which a prosecutor excluded a Latino juror. The defense brought a Batson case against him. The prosecutor said, well, I'm not excluding him because he's Latino. I'm excluding him because he speaks Spanish. And the judge said, oh, well, that's race neutral. That's an okay reason to exclude him. That's ludicrous. And the final thing is that in the voir dire process, that's the process in which potential jurors are questioned, we've got to give defense attorneys more space to ask about race and bias. Of course, if you ask anybody these days, are you prejudiced? Are you racist? They're going to say no. So we have to allow defense attorneys a lot more latitude to try to get at this very real problem of bias against people of color.
Paul, I have to ask you, though, you say that people of color are not selected for jury duty because there is a perception that they're not going to convict other people of color. But at the same time, you're also encouraging black jurors not to convict other black jurors. So how do you balance these two statements?
One thing that jury nullification does is encourage prosecutors to bring more just cases. So in jurisdictions like the Bronx, like Oakland, like Washington, D.C., where there are a lot of jurors of color, prosecutors tend to be more selective in the cases that they bring. So I think that knowing there are these jurors out there who are going to exercise their constitutional power to look at a particular case and think about whether punishment is deserved, if prosecutors understand that, that's going to encourage them to bring cases that are more responsive to the community needs. In our democracy, that's just what we need. At the end of the day, what jurors of color say is that when it comes to criminal justice, what's good enough for white people is good enough for us.
Paul Butler is a law professor at Georgetown University School of Law. He is a former federal prosecutor and the author of the forthcoming book, Chokehold Policing Black Men. Paul, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.